through my department site.
Well, I thank you once again for joining me and for educating me about the who and the where and the likeness of William Shakespeare. Thank you again.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Trevor. Thank you.
And have a good night.
Okay, you too.
Past episodes of Times Like Now can be heard wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to the letter J. Cody Robertson for original music. I am approaching my one-year anniversary, and I would love to hear from you. I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
It's that time of year again. It's time to support the causes that matter in our lives. It's time to give back to the organizations that give back to our communities all year round. Make KBOO a part of your Giving Tuesday plans and donate today at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Help KBOO get a strong start to the end of year fundraising season on Giving Tuesday, and the impact of your gift will be doubled. That's right. The generous support of Garnier Vineyards in Mosier, Oregon will match your donations this Giving Tuesday, dollar for dollar, up to $5,000. Check KBOO off your Giving Tuesday donation list right now at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And thank you.
Hello, this is Joseph Gallivan on KBOO, presenting Art Focus every Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. KBOO is in the middle of our end-of-year drive. 80% of our funding comes from our members, so please show your support by becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks a lot.
Andy Wawo looks a scream, hand him on my woe. Andy Wawo, silver scream, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Noah Matucci and Jamie Wilson. Noah's work Random 8 is on now through December the 12th at Jamie's Gallery Agenda, and Agenda is at 4505 Southeast Belmont Street behind the Red Square Cafe. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Jamie, people probably know this building as a PDX Originals. It's like a sort of fine woodworking workshop and showroom. And then in the back, there's this one little room, and this is your gallery. It's called Agenda. It's one room, no windows, and you, every few months, transform it into, you know, it's a show. So just tell us what Agenda is and how long it's been going and what type of art you like to show.
So I started the gallery in this space in August of 2020, which seems insane, and it probably is. But it's a very small space, and I sublease that little part from PDX Originals. And the space itself is somewhat limiting, and it's been a good parameter for me to like figure out what goes in the space, because really paintings don't go very well, because you can't really get enough distance on them. And so it's kind of evolved into a lot of installation, performance-based things that don't necessarily sell, but they are important to the conversation of art, in my opinion.
Do you see yourself in the same kind of grouping as Pica and Oregon Contemporary or any other galleries?
Yeah, I think a little bit, only because of the constraint of the space. I think that when I would describe my aesthetic, it's a lot like Jane Beebe's at PDX Contemporary. So that's kind of the work that sits in the racks, is stuff that is very contemporary but can go on your walls. But for the space itself, it's a little more like Pico or Oregon Contemporary.
And then you do have a separate room with the racks, the other work that's been here. Tell us about your connection to California and what other artists people could see here.
So I had a gallery in California from 2000 to 2004 called Square Blue, where I was mostly doing emerging artists who are now mid-career, and many of them have gone on to get really great LA galleries or even museum shows in LA. And what I was finding was that when I reconnected with them in 2019 is that a lot of their work was just sitting in storage. They would get their single solo show, and then anything that wasn't sold was getting wrapped and putting back in storage and never being seen again. And so I started taking work from down in California, trucking it up here, and putting it in my racks and using it in scenarios that were maybe non-traditional, like staged homes. The garden show had sort of an interiors that I did some things for, just things like that, just trying to get the work seen again before I had this specific space.
And Noah, your work, Random Eights, we're going to go in and look at it in a second, but it's a multicolored room. It's basically many thousands of colored squares and rectangles in a room. Tell us about your common practice and maybe even your day job, and then how you came to create this work for this room.
Sure. So I'm a artist and printmaker based out of Vancouver, Washington, currently working as the fine arts technician for Washington State University, Vancouver. This show was really started when I was introduced to Jamie through my colleague, Avanti Gabawa, who had a show here a few months back. Jamie saw my work. She liked it. She liked some of the work that I was doing in grad school, where I would print pixels or squares and just plaster them all over my studio space. And so we just started talking about what kind of experimental installation I could do in this space, and that's where it's kind of started.
Tell us, who is Avantika?
Avantika Bawa, she's a great artist. Also, she works out of WSU, mostly known for her grids and scaffolds. She did a really interesting installation in the RAN in India, full-scale scaffold. And so she did some tiny scaffolds, and we built them in this space using light and the walls painted black to create these great shadows and stuff. She's a really great artist. She recently had a solo show at Portland Art Museum dedicated to the Colosseum. She did thousands of drawings of the Colosseum.
The one in Rome or in Northeast here?
The one in Northeast.
Yeah, huge Blazers fan. But she's a big supporter of mine, and she has shows all over, and she's a connector. I'm very lucky to be able to work with her because, you know, I get connections like this. I get a show in this space here.
So, Noah, do you make any other kinds of work? Like, do you make traditional painting or traditional sculpture?
No, strictly printmaking. When I was in school, undergrad in Santa Cruz, I wanted to be a painter and draw. But then I just took a class on printmaking, something that I didn't even know was a thing. And I just fell in love with the community. It was the first instance where I would collaborate with someone to make a print. You know, we would do lithography where I'm drawing with a waxy crayon onto the surface of a stone, and then I would have a partner help me wipe the stone with water and print it through a press. And so for me, I didn't really have to think about content or meaning. It was about process. It was about printing. It was about this space where I could work with other people. And since that, I took that class, I've just been a printmaker ever since, doing screen printing. In this case here, Random Eight relief woodblock printing. And that's mainly what I do. I'll incorporate some digital technology, coding, In grad school, I dealt a lot with Arduinos and the processing program, and then I would slowly incorporate that into my work as well.
So I've always thought of printing as, you know, traditionally somebody makes a work of art and they need many reproductions, and printers do that job. But you come to it from the point of view of pure printing. Your original is kind of the print. And then have you taken it a step further by kind of plastering it around a room?
I think so. Yeah, I steer away from reproductions. The form of art is making the work through printmaking, through that technique, as opposed to just reproducing something. There's something to be said about repeating a piece. I think I do like to question this notion of originality, and printmaking helps me facilitate that in that way. When you print something in a series, there are no originals. There's one in a series.
But what I was seeing in his work is the performative of it, because it is so labor-intensive, and it's sort of an exercise in futility in a way, that it's not really unlike a Marina Abramović, where you're, you know, you have that performative element, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of discipline to get it done. Or maybe even Christo Jean-Claude situation, where we're papering this room for no real reason other than it needs to be done. So I see the performative element in your work.
Yeah, it's very process heavy. I think when you talk about Marina Abramović, I think just the idea of me being in a space, I feel like I'm very removed from the image itself, although I'm completely there with regard to the process, or the misprints or the misregistration of the pixels on the wall. I guess I would try and hide behind that in a way.
Let's go in and have a look at it. Hi, it's Joseph with Art Focus on KBOO. Don't forget, we're in the middle of our end of the year drive, so please show your support by becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks. We're in the gallery now, Noah, and the whole room is, well, there's a black carpeted floor, but the four walls are this kind of dazzling array of pixels, colored squares. Some of them are just one square, and then in other parts you've grouped them in like nines and 12s and bigger groups. So it's like a big glitch, really, a big kind of visual computer glitch. And it's kind of rainbow-like, but there's a lot of black in here too. Is there some kind of system behind the arrangement of the squares? And also, what is the actual material you're using? It looks like paper on a wall.
Yeah, it is a bit overwhelming when you kind of step in and see the space itself. I think it's very systematic in my process, a bit convoluted at times, but I'm generating a code that's randomizing pixels in a grid, and it's randomizing them based off of arrangement and color, and then I'm varying the size of that pixel. So you'll have 1-inch square pixels, and then they'll increase 2-inch, 4-inch, 8-inch, 16, 32, and then I'm translating that image that coded image into a traditional printmaking process via wood blocks. So my pixels become the blocks of wood that I'm inking. I'm using Sheena plywood. I'm cutting those up into squares, placing them into a jig, inking cyan, magenta, yellow, black on top in different layers. Those are the colors I'm using. And then I'm feeding that through a printmaking press, cutting them down, and then wheat pasting them onto the wall.
So it's the first thing you do, you sit down at a computer and you take an image and randomize it, or does the computer create something out of nothing?
So yeah, I'm just creating something out of nothing. I'm using a program called Processing, developed by a couple guys at MIT, which is a really useful tool for visualizing code for artists. And I'm essentially saying, draw a square to the screen, randomize its movement on the screen, randomize its color, and then loop that process over and over again. If I were to sit down and do that by hand, it would take me forever to do that. And one of the cool ways, things that I can do with this tool is just create really complex images really fast after I just write that really basic code of randomize movement, randomize color. And then I'll get just, you know, thousands of frames of this constantly looping, moving image that does resemble a glitch in that way.
It sounds like you create an animation. I mean, how many seconds long is this moving image?
I'm creating frames. It can be an animation if I play them all together. At the end of each line of code or the whole block of code, it'll save a frame of the animation. Yeah, so there's a possibility for having this animated in that way, I believe, yeah.
I don't understand how these moving images on a screen end up as this 360, four rectangles thing that you pasted on the wall. So did you just take a snapshot of the whole thing, or is this multiple?
I did, so I took the space into account. I measured all of the walls in the space, and that became the pixel dimensions of the code. And then I chose one of those frames that I thought would fit well in the space. I wanted to give viewers a place where they could rest their eyes. So I made sure that one side had larger squares where there wasn't as much noise as some of these other parts. So I took into account the architecture, the walls of the space. But yeah, essentially, I'm picking a frame of the code itself and then translating that to fit onto the room.
Was there something deliberately like anti-digital about using woodblock printing?
I wouldn't say anti-digital. There's a tendency for people to increase resolution, whereas I feel my tendency is to lower resolution and to do things that would take an absurd amount of time. One question I get a lot is, couldn't you just print this digitally? And I think the process of hand printing is really important. But also, in my experience and in kind of the printmaking community, there's also been a very like negative backlash against digital technology integrating into traditional printmaking practices. And people will say, oh, digital images are cold. But I think that you can have pretty meaningful interactions in a digital space through pixels. I mean, all of our lives are just filtered through digital screens. And so, in a way, I'm trying to also humanize the pixel to give it some life or humanity.
Explain the CMYK thing, right? We're not looking at a computer screen. We're looking at the four colors that make up like a magazine, the four colors of ink. What are they?
Cyan, magenta, yellow, and black.
And K stands for black.
Yes.
CMYK. And we're looking at one of these squares. It looks like navy blue, but there is, between the inch squares, there's pink and there's royal blue showing up, which must be cyan and magenta, the pink and the blue. So how many layers does it take just to make this one blue big square?
Yeah, the purple or the violet that occurs is the cyan and magenta layer together. And you'll see where the blocks overlap. You'll see hints of both the cyan and magenta come through. And those are really interesting features that you wouldn't be able to get digitally. You'll see the cuts in the wood. You'll see the grain in the wood. And you'll see them misregistered. And the reason I'm using CMYK colors is because I'm trying to limit as much control or intention as possible. So I'm using straight out of the can process printmaking colors. And they also allow me to generate more colors with printing fewer layers. So I can get eight colors and just use four layers of ink.
What are the eight colors?
So the eight colors I'm using are cyan, magenta, yellow, violet, green, orange, black, and then no ink at all is white.
But But the green, is that from a can or is that from the blue and the yellow
That's
together?
From, yeah, the cyan and the yellow
okay.
together. Yeah.
When you open the can, does the can say on it cyan?
Yes.
Like pure cyan?
It'll say processed cyan. And those are just those are the CMYK printing colors. Any advertisement, any magazine poster will be printed in CMYK.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Noah Matucci and Jamie Wilson. Noah's work, Random 8, is on now in Jamie Wilson's gallery, Agenda. That's at 4505 Southeast Belmont, and it's up through December the 12th. Hi, it's Joseph Gallivan. If you're enjoying the show, please show your support for this program and all your favorite KBOO programs by donating to KBOO's end of the year drive today. KBOO is from your voices, from your community. So show your support. Become a member of KBOO today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks very much. There was a PNCA when they had their building in a warehouse in the Pearl on Johnson. Somebody took a line of, I think it was Baudelaire, and converted it into like kind of dots and dashes and stretched them and printed them around the outside of the building. And the whole point was building code dictates the way buildings feel. Like you have to have so many parking stalls, and that means the pillars have to be a certain width apart. And it was trying to say architecture is sort of dominated by these hidden rules that aren't particularly human or human-centered. Was there some kind of big idea behind this work that is similar to that?
No, not really. I mean, so I'm interested in chance and kind of the philosophy of chance, or incorporating that into my work. I think where architecture comes into play, this work could be physically mapped onto any sphere. And the moments I think that are really interesting are when we start getting away from the walls, and we'll start getting these weird extrusions, or the trim on the window, or the at the bottom here, or the outlets. And so these pixels just are being mapped to the space, but they're also bringing attention into the certain accessories involved in that space. As far as architecture or underlying meanings, this could be just physically mapped to anything.
I think the other element is that it becomes very interactive, because as people come in, there's all these selfies and usies and things that are happening. And to see it take on new life as it's posted on Instagram or, you know, shared, it changes it yet again. It gives it scale. It just surprised me how well it works for that venue, which is sort of like the new venue is social media.
We talked earlier about, you know, the kind of double-edged sword for artists that is Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Just explain what you were talking about.
My theory. I'm worried. I'm worried that we're going to lose a generation of artists, or at least a good portion of them, because of social media and the immediacy of posting a work and someone liking it. And then so you end up doing more of that work because you're able to sell that specific piece and someone else wants one, so you make another. And you just turn yourself sort of into a manufacturer, as opposed to pre-social media, when you would paint or sculpt or think for 2 solid years between shows, and no one would see your work until it was opened at a physical gallery. And it takes out that contemplative little section that needs to happen for a body of work to be fully developed. So I hate to see, I never want to deny an artist the ability to make a living from their work, but I'm interested in the larger picture of, will their career be meaningful? And will you be creating things that should go into a museum and should be remembered? Or are you going to continue to just make the same thing over and over?
Mm-hmm. So would you caution an artist who's talented but is stuck in that feedback loop of, you know, likes,
For sure.
Caution them to take a break from social?
Maybe a social media break, but maybe you can post more about process and things like that and not posting the actual finished work and sort of holding that back for one big reveal. Even if that big reveal is on social media, you know, maybe you've made six pieces and you've taken a year before showing those six. Just to give yourself more of that time to process the work mentally.
Noah, could this whole thing have been done with projectors or with giant screens instead of walls? You know, just electronics?
It could have. It would have been about something else, I think, in that sphere. These are able to be projected. You're even able to hook up sensors maybe and have the people come in and then the shapes change color depending on, you know, someone's location in the space. But I felt on some level it was kind of gimmicky. You know, it was a exploratorium feel. So I felt more comfortable just translating it into relief printmaking in that way and just have a singular image that kind of excludes people from participating in that way. There, a project I have been working on for a few years is how to project relief woodblocks into a program that gets displayed visually. So is there a way to replicate the grain of the wood, the misregistration via code, and then project it that way? That's something that I would be interested in doing. So you're kind of confounding these two spheres, the analog and the digital. But straight digital projection, I don't think I'm as interested just as, you know, traditional printmaking.
Do you have a kind of analog preference? You know, are you one of these people who collects vinyl or, you know?
No, I like digital things, I like traditional things. But for printmaking, I like the work, I like the process, I like making things by hand. And that kind of trumps everything else. But I'm also open to including digital work into that workflow. But no, I don't think that older things are more valuable just because of nostalgia. You know, and when screen printing was coming out in the 20th century, you know, there was backlash that was machine made or that wasn't made by hand. And then that's just been completely incorporated into traditional printmaking processes. So I feel like we're just in a point in time where we'll get over, you know, digital technology, and that'll just be another tool, the tool belt of the artist to use. And then I think some point in the future, people will look back at digital imaging or digital images with the same nostalgia they feel for woodblocks, I think.
So this is the last thing that'll happen in this space as agenda. And so from here, I'll continue agenda, and it will continue to exist in social media as agenda.pdx on Instagram. But I have some proposals out for some other spaces. I don't want to say who they are right now because they're still proposals. So I will continue to curate in spaces that are not my own until I find another space, which I'm looking hopefully to be in North Portland, maybe downtown Vancouver. So
what's so good about Vancouver?
It's developing a lot. I feel a lot like it feels like 2010 Portland up there. The scene up there is getting kind of good, honestly. So I think the big downside is sales tax, so having to keep track of that and report that is what makes me lean more toward North Portland.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Noah Matucci and Jamie Wilson. Noah's show, Random 8, is on now at Jamie's Gallery Agenda, which is Agenda PDX on Instagram. It's up through December the 12th, and the gallery's at 4505 Southeast Belmont behind the Red Square Cafe. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Jamie and Noah.
Super fun.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, this is Joseph Gallivan. Thanks for supporting Community Radio. 80% of our funding comes from our members. So I want you to send some money to KBOO. Go on kboo.fm and look for the big donate button. Thanks.
When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about blue, what a jolly boring thing to do. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory.
Oh,
to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us.
¿Estás escuchando?
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 30 de noviembre del 2021. El ministro de Salud de Israel ha sugerido que las personas completamente vacunadas contra el COVID-19 y dentro de los 6 meses posteriores a un refuerzo también pueden estar protegidas contra la variante Omicron. Netzan Horowitz habló hoy martes después de que se identificaran otros 2 casos de personas infectadas con la variante en Israel, lo que eleva el total del país a 4. Sin citar ningún dato, él dijo a periodistas locales: "En los próximos días tendremos información más precisa sobre la eficacia de la vacuna frente a Omicron, pero ya hay